It's bath time. Right now, people everywhere are working harder than ever to make ends meet. They're struggling to meet the day's challenges, to keep their heads above water, to stay hopeful in the face of adversity. People are working hard, and they're dirty. It's bath time at Bubble Genius, too. We can do this. Now more than ever, we may have a little more dirt under our nails, but we're all gonna come through this together. A little stronger, a little better, and a whole lot better smelling. And when we do, the world's gonna hear the roar of our bubbles. Yeah. It's bath time, America.
Bubble Genius, bringing people together one bathtub at a time.
Do you feel sudsy, punk? Well, do ya?
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
My name is Rex, and if you study with my 8-week program, you will learn a system of self-defense that I developed over 2 seasons of fighting in the Octagon. It's called Rex Kwando. I need a volunteer. Okay, you'll do. Come up here. Bow to your sensei. Bow to your sensei! Okay. Now I'm gonna give you one chance. One chance, people. Grab my arm. The other arm. My other arm. Okay, now watch this. I'm just gonna break the wrist and walk away. Break the wrist, walk away.
Jeez.
Now, in addition to what you just saw, if you study with my 8-week program, you're gonna learn these things. First off, Rex Kwando, we use the buddy system. No more flying solo. You need somebody watching your back at all times.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Radio flows with life. With salt and pepper, a fork and knife. Radio goes with life.
I love carpet. I love desk.
Brick, are you just looking at things in the office and saying that you love them?
I love lamp.
Do you really love the lamp, or are you just saying it because you saw it?
I love lamp. I love lamp.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, February 23rd, 2012. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez.
Mm-hmm.
I love lamp.
I love mitt.
I love that the trees are all the same height, whatever the F that means. Has anyone figured that out yet?
Somebody on YouTube commented and said that his empathy chip was malfunctioning.
That's right. He's got that emotion chip that Data had in the Star Trek.
Right, yeah. And it's just started malfunctioning. He just started naming crap around him.
Just started trees. Started naming nuts. He's going to start naming nuts like Best in Show. Pine nuts. Pistachio nuts. White, all natural. All natural white pistachio nuts. God, he did. You know, and every time he tries to improvise, he just melts down. It's just this jittery. He's like reduced to his basic human existence. He's just becomes this jittery mess, spastic, twitchy, stammering mess.
He's a weirdo. I mean, he just is. Yeah. He's no, you know, I honestly don't mean to paint, you know, one religion with the same brush, but I don't know whether it's the religion, the upbringing, just the fact that he was as sort of cloistered as he was, but he doesn't seem to be able to interact in any way, in any meaningful way, with the real world. He is on a completely different plane of existence.
Yeah, and I saw some things online, some theories that he might have like Asperger's or something.
Yeah, I mean,
like, obviously very functional.
That's not bad. I mean, he really does have, he seems to have no way to actually, there's really, the joke is true, there's no empathy there. He doesn't know how to interact with people.
Well, part of the problem is that, we talked about this on the show before, is that I think it's the teleprompter meme just utterly backfiring on these guys. I mean, it's just been a cavalcade of gaffes, and it's been kind of running concurrently with the various surges. You know, as soon as Herman Cain starts surging, it becomes this ongoing parade of gaffes. And it's all because they can't use a teleprompter because they've painted themselves into this ridiculous corner where they can't use a teleprompter. They just criticize the president.
They're victims of their own conspiracy theory.
That's right.
There's no doubt about that.
That's exactly right. Well, in case you haven't heard it yet, this is the Mitt Romney tape from a couple days ago, speaking off the cuff in Michigan. The place where he was born.
A little history. I was born and raised here. I love this state. It seems right here. The trees are the right height. I like seeing the lakes. I love the lakes. There's something very special here. The Great Lakes, but also all the little inland lakes that dot the parts of Michigan. I love cars. I don't know. I mean, I grew up totally in love with cars. It used to be in the 50s and 60s, if you showed me one square foot of almost any part of a car, I could tell you what brand it was, the model, and so forth. Now with all the Japanese cars, I'm not quite so good at it, but I still know the American cars pretty well, and drive a Mustang. I love cars.
That was my favorite part, where he just shoehorns in the thing about a Mustang. I drive a Mustang, and cars, and trees are the same.
He's like
height.
Rain Man. Yeah. President Rain Man.
President Rain Man.
Yeah, I mean it's difficult to listen to him. It's uncomfortable. It makes you cringe. It's douche chills.
Yeah, well,
it's like you feel bad for him. It just please turn this off.
It's the same kind of and there's almost an empathy there too, because I think we've all been in a situation where we've had to maybe answer a question in a classroom that we're not prepared for, and then we just try to bullshit our way around it.
Right.
Yeah. Mr. Pazienza, can you stand up and tell us about 18th century art?
No, I can't, because I've got a hard-on for the girl sitting the desk over from me.
So,
that was my elementary school career.
Right, right. But most of us would actually just stand up and say, well, either I'm unprepared for this question, I'm sorry, or, you know, try to bullshit our way through it. Well, there are lots of different colors of paint that they used in the Victorian era, and the paint. And I love all the paintings. I especially love the paintings of people, and I love the paintings of the trees. And they're all the trees are the same height. And
this book was very, 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 very interesting.
You didn't read the work, did you?
No, am I at 5,000 words yet? Or however many 500 words? How many words you're supposed to write when you're like middle school, high school, whatever?
Yeah. So, again.
Just, at some point, he's just going to stand up and yell, San Dimas High School football rules. And it's going to be an applause line.
That's right. That's exactly right. Here's Mr. Socrates to tell us about.
That's right. And Dave Beethoven.
Beethoven. And Mr. the Kid.
Mr. the Kid.
And what's strange is, you know, look, the guy can actually speak. I mean, he's not an idiot. I mean, Mitt Romney's
of
things. He's not stupid. And when he's got prepared remarks in front of him, whether they're on note cards or they're on a teleprompter, he can actually, you know, deliver a fairly decent speech. I mean, he's certainly not a great orator, but he certainly knows how to talk in front of a crowd. But
no,
then
he's not stupid.
They stick. I mean, we saw this. I forget if it was. I don't think it was Iowa. I think it was Iowa. I think it was his Iowa victory speech, where he just. They sent him out there without prepared remarks, and he just kind of improvised around his stump speech, and it was all about, you know, Amber, that joke, Amber waves are grain. Does corn count as grain? I don't know. You know, and you just want to say, take a deep breath, Mr. Romney, please. Take a deep breath. Relax. It's okay. You just won Iowa.
Right.
In with the good, out with the bad. Like the Cosby breathing he's got to do.
Right. Before he's like the William H. Macy father character in Pleasantville.
Sure.
Just constantly kind of frazzled. And if things don't go exactly the way they're supposed to, you can see him, the scared, you know, the terrified look in his eyes.
Yeah. Either that or Kramer in that cafe latte episode of Seinfeld.
Yes.
I want a cafe latte? Oh, you want a cafe latte? We're going to go get some cafe latte.
Yeah, speaking of Seinfeld, Romney screwing up the, like Vanity Fair, his pop culture chip circa 1990 He tried that out and failed miserably by misquoting Seinfeld last night.
Yeah, and then Jason Alexander responded. Yeah, I saw that too. But you know,
it wasn't George. It was Jerry who said that, and it wasn't. You sit down after you get applause. It's you get up and leave.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's actually one of my favorite Seinfeld episodes.
Speaking of the things that Mitt Romney says that actually make sense, I mean, this week he did in fact say something that very few politicians are actually saying, which is, quote,
"What the hell am I doing here?
What the hell am I doing here?" Quote, if you just cut spending, if all you're thinking about doing is cutting spending, why, as you cut spending, you'll slow down the economy. Bingo. Exactly. That's what everybody should have been saying for the last God only knows how many years. 3 years?
Sure.
But instead, it's been austerity, austerity, austerity. We got to cut the debt. We're going to become Greece. We're all going to die. Dogs and cats sleeping together. Mass hysteria. Dogs and cats. I think it's dogs and cats living together. What the hell am I thinking of?
I think we're up to, like, what, 6 movie references so far in, like, the first 7 minutes of the show?
Let's see if we can shoehorn in some more. I think we can get some more in here. But, you know, again, look, the guy, when he's trying to, I don't know, scramble his way through one of these public speaking engagements, one of his stump speeches, sometimes something interesting jumps out as he's talking about trees and cars and I have a Mustang. Bah, bah, bah.
Because sometimes I get the impression that sometimes what he really thinks comes out. You know, I mean, Romney is kind of famous for that. I mean, you know, the corporations are people too, my friend, that was a line that you could tell he really believed that. Yeah. It wasn't a gaffe. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, that was the real Romney, for what it's worth, coming through. And I think that he's playing this red meat conservative now, and he's not really a red meat conservative. Every once in a while, what he really thinks will pop out. And the fact is, you know, I'm not, you know, you talk a lot about this on your blog, you know, the sort of more safe and electable. I think that that's kind of BS, but I do get the idea that he is certainly more moderate than the people he's surrounded by at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has to get to that audience. No choice.
Well, you know, I think what we're witnessing here across the board with all of the candidates, and mostly I think what we're seeing with Mitt Romney, because he's the most moderate of all the Republicans, is the extremist far right Tea Party wing of the party and of the movement wagging the dog. You know, you see that with the teleprompters. You see that with basically all of these. You know, talk about cutting spending and growing the economy, or shrinking the economy, as the case may be. This is all the Tea Party, this small but very loud faction of the Republican Party, of the conservative movement, dictating what's going on. And so you have someone who, you know what, for all intents and purposes, as far as Republicans go, kind of makes sense sometimes. He's got a pretty moderate record, irrespective of what he's actually saying on the stump these days. But because these yahoos on the far right are so loud and they carry, for some reason, a lot of power, they feel like, and especially Mitt Romney, they feel like they have to pander to these people. And they don't really control that much. They don't.
No,
I mean,
don't.
And when you really dig through all of the noise, I mean, look, Matt Drudge supporting Mitt Romney. You know, Ann Coulter supporting Mitt Romney. You know, there's a weird factionalization of the Republican Party going on right now, where people who you think are part of the wackaloon crowd are kind of, you know, making the right choices from their perspective.
Making the right choices as a matter of you know, they have to. They have no choice. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to do it if they want to survive, if they want to become they know that Santorum, Gingrich, all of these people, they have no chance. They have no chance of getting into the White House. Mitt Romney is the only person right now in this race. He's not the best choice, but he is the only choice to be able to return the Republican Party to power.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he is. That's true. But, you know, you would think, for example, that that Matt Drudge would be someone who would back, you know, Rick Santorum or, at the time, Herman Cain or Rick Perry. But he's, you know, he seems to be, at least based on looking at the Drudge report, he seems to be in the camp of Mitt Romney. And I think that's partly because they understand that in order to win nationally, you have to be able to appeal to the, you know, the independent middle.
Right. Well, that's what I mean.
The undecided voters. That's right. And so,
yeah, that is their one sort of bow to reality, mm-hmm. which is that they know full well that if somebody like Santorum, Gingrich were to get the nomination, that person would not go on to win. It just wouldn't happen. There aren't enough wackos. There aren't enough people who believe the horrendous, horrific nonsense that comes out of Santorum's mouth on a regular basis in this country to put him in the White House, to put his ass in the Oval Office.
It's just it's fascinating to watch. I mean, there are going to be scores of books that are going to be written about what's happened to the conservative movement over just the last year alone. And the types of candidates that they've elevated and then beaten down, had the enthusiasm whipped right out of them, you know, driven them out of the race. And the theory behind all of it is that I think that just the noise, I think the noise has gotten to them, where they just believe that the noise means power. When there are no numbers, there are no significant Tea Party numbers to back up the amount of noise they're making.
No, this is true. Elliot Spitzer wrote a pretty good article for Slate where he talked about, I think it was either today or yesterday, where he talked about, like you said, sort of the factionalization of the Republican Party and the fact that it's basically split into three groups now. It's mm-hmm. The far right zealots, the moderate Republicans, the people, the Mitt Romneys, certainly the fiscally conservative ones and the ones for whom that's the most important thing. And then the libertarians, who are represented by Ron Paul, of course. And the one problem is that there will not be any one candidate who will appeal to all three of those groups.
Yeah.
It just won't happen.
Well, we're going to talk about the Republican primaries. We're going to talk a little bit about the what's going on in Virginia. And the Muslim rumors are back in full force with a vengeance. And we're going to get to all of that after a quick break. Back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
We're back.
Still a damn good rock and roll record.
This song is so great.
It's a really good album.
Whenever I hear Motley Crue, I kind of get a smile on my face. And it's because I worked with a lot of bands making music videos for them, like animated music videos. And most of the bands I worked with were total a-holes. I mean, they were real d-bags. But not Motley Crue. You couldn't ask for a nicer guy than Nikki Sixx.
Yeah, Nikki's a pretty good guy. And Tommy's terrific.
So there's been good news in Virginia over the last 24 hours. I think this is another sign that that activism really seems to be working these days. I'm not sure exactly why, but this is maybe the third or fourth time when there has been a lot of outrage, a lot of targeted activism against a decision that's being made, and that decision has been reversed. Now, previous to this, it was the whole Komen thing, where Komen backtracked on their decision to stop funding Planned Parenthood. And over the last 24 hours, the wing nuttiest wing nuts in Virginia backed away from not only this transvaginal ultrasound piece of legislation, what a lot of us have been calling state-sponsored rape.
That's what it is.
It is exactly that.
It so absolutely is.
What they've done.
That's Bob, not overstating it at all.
Bob McDonnell, the governor of Virginia, backed away, said he pulled his support for the legislation, went back to the Virginia Senate, and they decided to change the bill. So it's still despicable. It's still sinister, but it's not invasive. They're still going to do the way we described it last week on the on the stomach, what the technical term is, the on the stomach ultrasound. That's the right. That's the technical term. That's the scientific term. It's
you know,
the one where they put
had
the
brain power to pull it off.
Yeah.
I would be a conspiracy theorist and say that they put that, you know, piece of legislation in there so that they could then back off and keep the basic ultrasound part of it and not get a lot of crap for it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's still one of those things where they're what they're trying to do is they're trying to intimidate women into not having abortions. Like, again, look at the baby. Look at the baby. Why do you want to kill this baby? You know, and in fact, if the ultrasound was actually worth seeing, because every ultrasound I've seen, it looks like some kind of pixelated globule of some sort moving around. It doesn't look like a person in there. It doesn't look like anything in there. It just looks like a mess.
It does once you get further along, obviously.
Yeah, it does, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what? In the first trimester, though? I mean, what are you going to see?
No. Usually you see very, very little. But, I mean, obviously, as you get further along, it becomes much more impressive.
Yeah. But so this is done. They've gotten rid of this transducer device. And it's not going to be a part of, at least in terms of the Virginia government mandating it. Certainly, if there's some kind of medical need to use it, they're going to use it in an abortion scenario. But it's going to be a decision made by a doctor and not by the governor and the Virginia State Senate. And then I just heard before, and I don't have exact verification, it was just right before we started the show, that this other piece of legislation, this Life Begins at Conception legislation, they're sending it back to committee. So it's both of the bills that we were talking about last week. And this is, again, following a lot of outrage. A lot of people saying this is just wrong. And knowing that Virginia, and especially the governor, they need the liberals in Northern Virginia in order to get elected. So they're not going to, they're not going to shoot themselves in the foot necessarily, regardless of how ideological they are about this.
Yeah, what did I say about Virginia on the blog this week? State motto is roughly 28 square miles of relative sanity.
right. And it is, living in Northern Virginia is great. But again, you drive
it is very nice.
You drive 50 miles to the west, and boy, you're talking about really toothless. It's it's like a vortex of toothlessness. And sorry. Rural Virginians, the one of you listening to the show right now. But, I think what this has shown is I think once we get coordinated and once we have, I think it's just by luck. I mean, believe me, I don't think anyone was sending out word to, liberal bloggers and activists to say, here's our message. But it just, I think recently it's congealed and formed into really salient arguments against some of these things. And it's worked.
It has. I also think that it takes – maybe it's just that the overreach has become so drastic.
Yeah.
It takes something that is so utterly abominable like this piece of Virginia legislation or like – or so obviously – disgusting and political, like the Susan G. Komen Planned Parenthood thing. That's the thing that makes the outrage sort of coalesce and become more focused where it needs to be.
Yeah,
because that's something that just about everybody who is somewhat progressive minded, and even some who aren't, will look at and say, "All right, wait a minute, that's completely wrong. That's an absolute wrong." And it's very rare that you get things like that. That you get. Anybody who's sort of political or politically minded politicians make a decision that is that is just such a, like I said, such a drastic overreach. And that's happened quite a bit lately.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, it's one of the reasons why I think, you know, I look at what the Republican Party's doing, and there are times when I honestly just think, I'm like, what are you people thinking? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the one thing you could always say about the Republicans, whether you agreed with their politics or not, was that they were savvy politicians. And it almost seems now like, holy hell, you people have just, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're setting yourselves up to fail. You're going after things that are so hideous and making decisions that are so wrong-headed backward that, yeah, you're basically opening the skies and the wrath of God is coming down on you on it.
Yeah, and right. And, you know, there are people within the party and within the conservative movement who are actually saying, stop it. What the hell are you doing? David Frum, Bruce Bartlett, these guys are all going, what is your problem? You're insane. This makes no sense. You know, there was something that was always, yeah, it was David Frum, wrote an extensive piece. I think it was for New York Magazine several months ago, where he basically talked about Republicanism as being like a marketing segment. Like, this is, right, this is a way to market to a certain audience that guarantees profit. You know, if you say A, B, and C, well, you're going to, it's kind of like, it's kind of like developing, you know, a following in porn. You put up a porn site, you're going to get traffic. If you start screaming about infanticide, you know, you're going to appeal to a certain audience, and they're going to buy your crap. And so, but that's no way to run a movement. That's no way to run a party because, you know, again,
it's as if everyone is just bucking for a show on Fox.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's right.
It really does feel that way. It feels as if they're not even interested in actual governance anymore. They're interested only, everyone is sort of interested only in what they can get out of it. Whatever book, you know, whatever Ann Coulter-esque, you know, inflammatorily, can, is that a word? Inflammatorily titled, incendiary titled book,
yeah,
that you put out that's going to sell a crap load of copies and getting invited on Fox News to be a contributor or amazing, the brass ring to get a show.
Right.
I think that's what it's starting to feel like.
Well, they, you know, again, if you're just some stupid morning zoo DJ and you suddenly talk about how the president is a secret Muslim, they're going to give you a nationally syndicated radio show that's going to be on in 150 markets nationwide and Armed Forces Radio. They're just a disaster. There's just a total disaster. And, more Republicans are attacking the First Lady. We'll talk about all of that coming up after a quick break, back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
That's right. And if you didn't know that, you're not actually seeing what's on your iTunes. Show brought to you, as it always is, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Best soap in the world, and I understand they're going to be remarketing their hibiscus soap, which is my favorite soap. I think they hinted that they might actually call it Bob's favorite hibiscus soap.
I think that would be a fine idea.
But don't get me wrong, they've got...
Bob won't shut up about this stuff.
And you'd think they'd only have one kind of soap there. They've got lots and lots of soap. It's all invariably sweet-smelling, and it's all vegan. It's got good stuff in it. No surfactants in the Bubble Genius soap.
It'll be important if I ever decide to eat it.
I mean, every conceivable shape and size of soap that you can possibly imagine. Soap in the shape of everything from lawn gnomes to Joe Lieberman.
Wow.
BubbleGenius.com. Here now is the latest word from Bubble Genius.
It's bath time. Right now, people everywhere are working harder than ever to make ends meet. They're struggling to meet the day's challenges, to keep their heads above water, to stay hopeful in the face of adversity. People are working hard, and they're dirty. It's bath time at Bubble Genius, too. We can do this. Now more than ever, we may have a little more dirt under our nails, But we're all going to come through this together. A little stronger, a little better, and a whole lot better smelling. And when we do, the world's going to hear the roar of our bubbles. Yeah. It's bath time, America.
Bubble Genius, bringing people together one bathtub at a time.
Do you feel sudsy, punk? Well, do ya?
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, for 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. It's a bargain at twice the price, and they pass the savings along to you.
I hung out with the Bubble Genius girls on Saturday.
On Saturday?
Yeah. And Paul was throwing an Oscar party this Sunday, so...
Oh, for the Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Hollywood Boulevard is already a freaking mess, man.
Is it black tie? Where is it going to be?
You what? Party?
Yeah, the
I
party.
I doubt that very seriously. Yeah. I think it's jammies and champagne.
Jammies and champagne. That sounds fun.
Yep.
So, yeah, I wish I could make that. I don't even know. We're going to talk about the Oscars a little bit on the after party.
Cool.
Which is coming up after this show. Or in a very non-linear way. Because God only knows when you listen to the after party, but if you're not a subscriber to the after party, you're missing all of the fun. Like we're
truly,
all
truly great radio.
A whole gaggle of us over here. We're all talking about really secret stuff, and you're just you're out of the loop if you're not a subscriber. And you talk about a bargain at twice the price. I swore I wasn't going to present it that way. We'll just put it this way. It's inexpensive. To subscribe to the after party, it's cheap,
It is, I think, very cheap.
It amounts to about $1.50 a show, so it's $6 a month. You subscribe, and once you subscribe, you don't have to do anything else other than listen.
Right.
And in fact, this week on the show, we're going to be talking about, as I said, the Oscars. We're going to talk about that scandal. We're going to talk about that scandal in Arizona, Sheriff Paul Babu.
Oh yeah,
and
what a shock!
Yeah,
never would have seen that one come.
I've got two bits of great Rick Santorum audio that I think very few people have actually heard these two clips, and they're very, very funny. And if you're not a subscriber to the After Party, you ain't going to hear them. And well, what we'll do sometimes with the After Party, you'll see if you're a subscriber, you see the shows and the new shows come up on the main page of the site, and they're invisible to everybody else. And so what we sometimes do is add, YouTube videos that we've played on the show, we'll add those on there, little notes, and then you can, just like regular blog posts, you can comment on all of this.
Pictures of our junk.
Yeah, pictures of our junk, which we're also going to talk about on the show. No, we're taking it. I did want to mention this this guy, Democratic lawmaker in Georgia, introduced this... this wonderful, wonderful kick in the nards to the Republicans in the state legislature down there. It's a great, just one of these. I love it when bills or amendments are presented just to F with people. And this is just a perfect example of that. A Democratic lawmaker in Georgia is responding to Republican-backed effort to prevent women from receiving abortions 20 weeks after fertilization with a tongue-in-cheek measure that seeks to limit men's health care choices. Legislation that, quote, would limit vasectomies only to men who will die or suffer dangerous health problems without one. Continues, thousands of Brilliant. Children are deprived of birth in this state every year because of the lack of state regulation over vasectomies. Said Representative Yasmeen Neal, Democrat. It is patently unfair that men can avoid unwanted fatherhood by presuming that their judgment over such matters is more valid than the judgment of the General Assembly. Ah, brilliant.
Yep.
Ah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. While women's ability to decide is constantly up for debate throughout the United States. Well, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, isn't a vasectomy is a form of birth control?
Birth control.
So I wonder, are healthcare providers covering vasectomies? Probably are. And would the Catholic Church Or would any of these organizations, would the Republican Party object to health, you know, health insurance companies covering vasectomies? I just love stuff like that. More.
It's
more of that
stuff. They never have a problem with that.
Of course they don't. And that's the ultimate thing. I mean, you know, we're watching the debate last night. I tweeted that, you know, it was summarizing all of their answers to the contraception question was basically, we hate women. I mean, that was basically what everyone was saying. You know, everything else was clicks and noises.
It's about constantly trying to reassert their masculinity, their masculine authority.
Right. Well, they're trying to build a bridge to the 1950s.
Exactly. Yes.
They just want. I mean, throughout all of these Republican debates, you just, if you listen very carefully, you put your face right up to the television screen like I do all the time. You just put it right up to the screen. You can very faintly in the background hear the theme song to Leave It to Beaver. One last quick break. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
I just downloaded this album from iTunes the other day.
Really good record.
It took me a long time to finally pick it up. I know. Just listening to it on endless loop. Foo Fighters and Rope right there. We're back, and one last segment on this week's program. I want to talk about this. Just real quick. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but, you know, Pat Buchanan was finally fired from MSNBC. And, you know, he then immediately, because he's such a noble man, such a respectable man who knows, you know, who his benefactors were for, despite all of his shortcomings and all of his moronic, awful, racist things, anti-Semitic things that he said over the years, they've still paid him. They still paid him time and time again, wheeled him out of that cryo freeze chamber in the green room, you know, thawed him out and stuck him in front of a camera. Seemed like every day, you know, as soon as he's let go for finally, you know, delivering the straw that broke the camel's back, He takes to his column and acts like a little whiny diaper baby. Whining and whining and whining in his syndicated column. The same syndicated column, by the way, that included the piece known as A Brief for Whitey, in which he talked about, you know, how black people should be grateful to white people, you know, because of food stamps. Black people.
I'm surprised he didn't take to Twitter to say, screw y'all, I got a Grammy.
White America has been great to black America. That's what he said. That's exactly what he wrote in that piece.
That's exactly what I just said. Yeah. It's the white male privilege.
Yeah.
To decide how much the minorities get, how far they get. And it can be benevolent or it can be tyrannical. But it doesn't matter. It's the white male. It's the white male's prerogative to decide how the world works.
That's right.
For everybody else.
That's right. And there's, you know, guys like Pat Buchanan are never going to fully understand why the things that they've said and the things that they've written are so awful, because they've got these blinders on. They've got this, and it's again, just as you said, it emanates from this sense of privilege, and it creates this. I don't know what it is. It's this utter blindness to the ridiculous things that pop out of their mouths.
You know, the thing is, it's very, very transparent sort of where Pat Buchanan is coming from when he talks about this. And that's kind of unfortunate, because I actually do think that there's a conversation to be had about whether it is necessarily a good or bad thing, or whether it's neutral, that certainly our country used to be run by mostly white people and is now being, you know, it truly is a melting pot, because so many different cultures have attained such a level of prominence within the country. And does that actually eventually hurt us? Will it hurt our sort of national identity in the long run? Mm-hmm. There's a conversation worth having there, but it's not one that comes from Pat Buchanan, because he's a racist, and you can tell 110% that's what he's getting at.
And it seems almost as if he doesn't even realize it. But, I mean, how could he not? You know, again, this is all part. This is a guy who was part of the political team who invented the Southern strategy.
Right.
I mean, it's historical fact that he was involved with the, you know, the campaign to reelect the president in 1972. They came up with this idea to begin dividing and inciting white people in the South. Yeah. By, you know, by throwing out these anti-black dog whistles.
Yep. But you I know. Think it's an interesting, just from a sociological point of view, I think it's an interesting question to ask. And I know a lot of countries are asking it, not just the U.S. But that's not what Buchanan's doing. Buchanan is, you know, railing from the rafters about how the end of white America means that, you know, our country is dissolving and won't exist anymore, which is nonsense.
Yeah. Well, the belief is that white people are what's civilized. They're the people. They're the people who are responsible for keeping America civilized and keeping America of a certain standard of living. Our standard of living in this country is based solely on the efforts and the civility of white people. Because, you know, white people throughout history.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And throughout history, white people have always been so civil. We've always been so decent to other people, haven't we? And so he believes that as America becomes browner, and it's inevitable. It's inevitable.
It is. Well, that's the reason, you know, we talked about it last week. That's the reason why you're seeing this insanity coming from the right. It really is, to some extent, logically, it's the death throes of that particular movement. Mm-hmm. Because demographically, it can't hold up. That kind of opinion can't hold up much longer because they are losing control.
That's right.
They are losing their power, their base.
I forget who it was this week who said that President Obama looks like a third world dictator.
Yeah, with the Karl mirror. Rove.
Karl Rove said that. That's right. Thank you.
Sunglasses and a Jeep. And
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. And that's the fit. But that cuts to exactly to what they believe. They believe that the president, by his very appearance, makes America seem like, you know, like a banana republic, like all of those sort of vaguely Hispanic, vaguely black people who run
despots.
Yeah, exactly. Like right. These.
The Manuel Noriega.
Manuel Noriega. Exactly.
You know,
Manuel
or one Noriega. Of the, you know, Mohammed Farah Hadid or some warlord over in Somalia.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so they think.
But you know, the great irony to that, though, is that, you know what's really third world? You know what's really sort of Middle Eastern dictator, that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. A theocracy, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is basically what Rick Santorum is advocating.
Sure.
That's third world.
Well, here's.
You know, when you have a leader who talks about it, this is kind of getting off on a tangent. When you have a leader who brings up Satan. You know, brings up a 2,000-year-old insane superstitious mythology into government. That's third world.
But, you know, I want to get back to this. I want to put a cap on this Pat Buchanan thing and move on because there's more fun to talk about. Pat Buchanan, this is what he wrote in his book. And this is just a great example of how he's just blind. Just blind. Doesn't understand what he's saying. Totally clueless. He says, if my book is racist and anti-Semitic, how did Sean Hannity, Aaron Burnett, Judge Andrew Napolitano, Megyn Kelly, Lou Dobbs, and Ralph Nader miss that? How did Charles Payne, African-American host on Fox Radio, who has interviewed me 3 times, fail to detect its racism? So you know what that is? That's basically Pat Buchanan saying, look at all these crazy people. They didn't see any racism. These guys on Fox News Channel, they didn't see any racism.
All
how,
these
how can
reactionary,
they
you know, largely white nutcases.
Right. Weirdo careerist morons. How did they not see that I was being racist? And then Charles Payne, Pat Buchanan might as well have said, yeah, my black friend, Charles Payne.
Right. By the way, an appeal to authority is a argumentative fallacy.
Yeah.
But that's right. He doesn't know that and doesn't care.
But, you know, related to all of this, the Republicans, for lack of anything else to say, with which to attack the president, are back to, you know, building a bridge to 2008, to repeat that meme. And they're just recycling their arguments from 2008.
Well, it's fascinating because really they don't have a leg to stand on anything else. That's why we're hearing all this nonsense about birth control and, you know, culture issues and secret Muslim agendas.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
That kind of crap. Yeah. Because if you talk about the economy, if you talk about something people actually give a crap about, they don't have a leg to stand on. They got nothing.
So they're back to the
Muslim.
And
they know it. That's the best part. You know they know it. You know they're terrified.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And there's lots of reasons for that. And, you know, they're really freaked out about the economy, the improved economy. And so they're flipping back, you know, through their playbook to 2008. And just seems like everybody's wheeling out the Obama as a secret Muslim, which is basically, see that black guy, he's a terrorist. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, just the whole debate over what the president's religion is isn't a debate over his religion. This is a debate over sort of inciting easily led mouth-breathing idiots into thinking that the president is somehow a terrorist sympathizer. The guy who killed bin Laden and has utterly shattered Al-Qaeda. He's a terrorist sympathizer. He's a terrorist sympathizer. He's sympathizing with them by blasting them away with drone strikes every other day.
The interesting thing, though, is that they have to, certainly the Republican establishment, like I said, you know, savvy politicians seem to not be in abundance in the Republican Party these days, inexplicably. But the Republican establishment, you know, the Karl Roves, you can tell that they see it. They know that they're playing to a smaller audience with that kind of crap, though. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't be stupid. They can't be.
Well, the first example that I've written down here of this kind of stupidity.
Yeah, and it is stupid.
Yeah. Is
God, I mean, I can't wrap my head around it.
I think we all are aware of what Franklin Graham said, Billy Graham's son, this week.
Yeah.
He said a lot of stuff, just a lot of crackpot stuff. But the meat of it was this. I can't say categorically that Obama is not Muslim, because Islam has gotten a free pass under Obama.
Yes, of course it has.
Free pass. I mean, what the hell does that even mean?
It's completely freaking detached from reality. Yeah. That's not even – that's the thing. Once again, you got to imagine that registers very hardcore. It burrows into the mind of a segment of the population. But I truly believe it's not a large segment. You know, I get it. I can be called out because I live on the coast and people will say, oh, you don't know how people think, you know – you know, the midsection of the country, and there are quite a few dingbats, which, you know, I hate thinking that way. But I can't imagine that people are so stupid that a lot of them, that you know, millions and millions and millions and millions, enough to win an election, buy into that kind of crap.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and I think that if they think that, they're going to be very, very unpleasantly surprised in a few months.
Yeah. Well, again, I cannot – I'm just staggered by the fact that here we are 4 years later when this guy has been president. I mean, it started and the excuse was 4 years ago, we don't know anything about this guy. He just appeared – he just kind of magically appeared in a puff of smoke. And here he is, the presumptive nominee for president.
Democratic Party. He's a Manchurian candidate.
Right. He's just come out of nowhere. And we don't know who he is, so we can just throw anything at him.
That's because he just come from a terrorist camp in Pakistan.
He escaped from Bagram. He's on the run, and he's running for president. And so it was easy. It worked at that time because no one knew anything about it. He's been president for 3 years now. He's been visible on the national stage for four plus. At least, a lot of us were aware of him, you know, back as far back as 2004 and earlier. But, I mean, as far as being, for lack of a better term, a national celebrity or public figure, it's been a lot of time to get to know who he is and what he's all about. But they're still, I don't know why, I mean, time and time again, they're playing to these small little segments of their electorate.
And the interesting thing is that it's not necessary.
Yeah.
Because that kind of rhetoric is not going to win anybody new over. You know, the people who think that thought that 4 years ago, and they haven't stopped thinking that. So you don't need to sort of reaffirm that in their minds. You know, they're dumb enough to where they're dumb and ignorant enough to where they've spent the past 4 years bemoaning the fact that, you know, the Kenyan usurper terrorist sympathizer made it into the White House and he's a danger. So I can't figure out who they're talking to.
And by all means, they can keep doing it if they want to, because it's only going to hurt them at this point. And they just fail to understand it. This goes back to what we were talking about in the first segment. They don't understand where the votes are coming from. They don't understand how these elections are swinging. It's the moderate, independent voter who decides these elections. You know, and this is a great lesson for the Democrats, and especially the progressives who think that the president should run hard left. You know, you can't win that way. You just can't. You know, as much as we'd like the guy to be this far left liberal, he just can't do it. You just can't do it. Democratic Party is a big tent party. And they spin all of these plates between the middle, the center left, and the far left.
I actually and don't that, want him to be far left. I never have.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there are things I'd like to see him do differently. But for the most part, in large part, I never needed to like every single thing that he did. And I'm pretty good with him being, you know, center left.
Well, yeah. Again, it's like who do you root for or who do you bet on in a football game? The person you want to win or the people who will win? And likewise, you know, there's certain things that, oh, in a perfect world, it'd be great if suddenly the president could just snap his fingers and global warming would go away. Or you know, snap his fingers and we would all have single-payer health care. It's just not going to happen. Realistically, it can't happen. So, you know, and that applies not only to passing the policy, but also to getting elected. Because, you know, look, there are a lot of different people in this gigantic country of ours who, you know, just aren't so clean cut. In terms of, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm across the board progressive or I'm across the board conservative. Most people, it's kind of a mixture of all different things. You know, you can draw kind of lines through a bunch of issues and kind of say, well, you know, we're more liberal than we are conservative, which I do believe. But, you know, I think it's not as easily defined as we'd like it to be. And so in order to get elected, the Democrats understand that you have to be a big tent, especially in this divisive era. The Republicans are failing to recognize that, and they're losing. And they're going to keep losing. They're going to lose this presidential election because they think that the meat and potatoes are on the far left Tea Party fringe. And they're wrong. They can't win because it's a group of people that is minuscule. They can't win based on, you know, a gaggle of senior citizen protesters sitting in lawn chairs and wearing tri-corner hats. Those people will not decide the election for the Republican Party. It's the people in the middle who are fed up with contraception as being a wedge issue. They're fed up with religion being a wedge issue. They're fed up with the far right movement of the party. And it's gonna backfire. But I mean, again, I go back to my thesis, which has always been: keep going, Republicans. Go on. That's fine. What you're doing, it's only helping us. Thank you.
That was a very impressive speech.
it's my stump.
I put it
my
to Greg. Isn't this an indictment? I don't know about you, but I'm not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth United States of America. Gentlemen.
It's my stump speech. I was about to start talking about how much I like trees in Michigan.
Amber waves of grain.
Amber waves of grain. And does corn count as amber waves of grain? I don't know. You know, I drive a Mustang, by the way. Well, we didn't get into everything we wanted to talk about. There was a bunch more of this stuff about Muslim rumors. This Santorum is ripe with it.
Yep.
And maybe we'll talk about PolitiFact is evergreen. We'll talk about PolitiFact next week.
Good enough.
But, yeah, if you want to know more about why PolitiFact sucks, go to Rachel Maddow's website. She did a great piece about how much of a disaster they really are. In a nutshell. Yeah, I'll just get to this just quickly here as we wrap up the show. PolitiFact says does a truthometer about something Marco Rubio said about the majority of Americans being conservative. Majority of Americans are conservative, Rubio says. And so PolitiFact looks at that and says, well, no, only 40% of Americans identify as conservative. Only about 45% of Americans identify as Republican. And you know what they give Marco Rubio's comment? Mostly true. Mostly true. Even though their own evidence cited in their very own piece completely debunked everything Rubio said. Yet another example of how, you know, you just cannot rely on anybody.
The internet.
To be an arbiter.
Nothing on the internet.
I mean, my kingdom for some sort of arbiter of reality somewhere. Some sort of place where we can all agree, well, whatever they say is objective reality.
Impossible.
And so that'll be our type. No, it doesn't work.
We're too divided. It's impossible.
Yeah. Sadly enough.
We don't approach arguments anymore with different opinions. We approach them with our own differing sets of facts.
That's right.
Handed to us by whatever media outlet we get down on our knees and submit to.
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. The after party is next. See you then, Chaz.
Adios.
I love lamp. I love lamp.